Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Well, everybody's buzzing about the picture underneath the arch with Mick Jagger. Saying we'll see you Sunday. They're setting up the stage. The Dome at America Center.
How about that?
Mick and the boys are taking the loop trolley this afternoon, exploring the town.
That's a good one, Klein. I like that. I do like that quite a bit. I have author Stephen Kersey. He's a journalist, and he wrote a really interesting book about this very strange town that is a host to something called the Green Bank Observatory. And I'll explain that to you in just a second. Dan Reardon from Kohler, Wisconsin, Sheboygan area, from the Ryder Cup. The U.S. actually doing quite well on day one. At least they were to start the day. We'll see how the afternoon session went with Four Ball with Dan here in just a bit. And we have Stephen Kersey coming up in audio cut of the day as well. But I always do the number one songs this day in history. So let's do that, because I haven't been here for a few Fridays, and then like three Fridays ago, we skipped them because they were, you know, sometimes you get into this rut where it's the same number one. I do have some good news, though, Sue.
What is it?
We have brand new songs for most of the time period.
Woo!
So for those people not familiar, go back 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, and then, you know, we pick up that number one song from right now. Dave, this has to be one of your all-time favorites from 1971, right? I'm thinking.
Go away, and go.
Oh my God, I haven't heard this one in a long time. Sue, you know who it is, don't
is
you?
Is this the Osmonds?
Donny Osmond.
Did he have puberty yet?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I don't think that's
here.
Clear. Yeah.
This was a few years before, you know, he was a little bit rock and roll and his sister was a little bit country, right?
Yeah.
I did watch that show all the time,
too. We were allowed to watch that one.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a variety show?
That was a variety show, yeah.
Donnie
Marie. Wasn't it just called the Donnie Marie Show?
I think so.
Great. You know what, Dave? It was wholesome.
It was wholesome, Dave.
Very wholesome. When Sue and I grew up, things were wholesome.
Yes.
Okay?
It's very true.
Much simpler times.
Yeah, much simpler times, right?
Thanks for pointing that out.
1981. Lionel Richie, Diana Ross, Endless Love, Endlessly.
Okay, I wasn't allowed to see this movie, and I really wanted to see it. My mom said no.
Oh, man. I'm trying to think back to the movie and don't think I have fond memories of the movie. I certainly know the song. You should see Klein in here doing his Lionel Richie.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
I don't know how long this was number one, but I'm guessing this was number one for a while, right?
Yeah, it's been on top for a while here.
Okay. I've heard it at Sugar Creek Pool in the summer. That's how I remember it.
I had to let it play out there with the piano over 1991. Color Me Bad.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
This is a bad
slow,
song.
Slow, boring song from 1991. It was much better 10 years after that. When Alicia Keys broke out, I think, wasn't it? A little bit. Well, no, not really. She would have been, 2001. That's about right.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I can't believe that was 20 years ago when you think about it.
This is a great song.
Yes.
Hey, speaking of Mick, how about this for 2011?
That's right.
Kiss me till you're drunk and I'll show you all the moves like Jagger. I've got the moves like Jagger. I've got the moves.
Room 5 was just here at the amphitheater a couple weeks ago. And then right now, the number one song, The Biebs, is staying very, very hot right now with this song.
Do the same thing I told you that I never would.
With The Kid LAROI, Stay is the song.
Find nobody else as good as you. I need you to
I don't like this song, I'm just going to say. Dave, you don't?
Well, there have been a lot worse number ones than this. I will say that.
Well, I think most of them are worse than this.
Yeah.
I have a bit of a song selection before we wrap up the hour as well, because I'll telegraph it a little bit. one of the members of Fleetwood Mac has a solo album out. We may have referred to it earlier this week.
We may have heard some of it.
We may have heard some of it earlier, but I have a different guitar part to play.
Okay.
And by the way, Klein, you see, this is the thing. Dave pulled this song the other day for me. He did exactly what I would ordinarily expect him to do because he's got great instincts on the songs. The only difference was this time I decided to do something different.
So that's all right. We fixed it.
You didn't do anything wrong. I just wanted you to know that because it was just me being picky about something. But I got a good guitar solo part for that coming up later. Dan Reardon from Whistling Straits. Right now, though, I mentioned, so deep in the Appalachian Mountains, there is the Green Bank Observatory. And the smart people of the world, much smarter than the guy on the radio, the astronomers, they look for things in the vast universe. But it can't work properly. That telescope cannot work properly unless there's no radio frequencies and other silence. It has to be quiet.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, so Green Bank has become a quote-unquote quiet town where there's actually a ban on electrical devices and things along those lines. I think it's very interesting, and Stephen Kersey is with me tonight. He wrote this book, The Quiet Zone. He's going to explain all of it to us. Stephen, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm great. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for calling me.
So let's get this established. You do not have, nor have you had a cell phone for a while, right?
You're talking to me over an iPod. I have not used a cell phone in quite a long time. I haven't owned one since 2009. That's when I threw it away. So ever since then, I've just kind of found workarounds. I use Skype. I use Google Voice. I, you know, use payphones sometimes even.
I think a lot of people would be envious of that, and we'll kind of get into that theme here with the discussion about this book. But does your wife have a cell phone, or are you married?
She's got two.
Okay.
She's got enough for both of us.
So you have some, you know, access to digital communication should you need it, I guess, is accurate.
Who doesn't? I mean, we're surrounded by this stuff, right? Like, we're so surrounded by it that I feel like I need a break from it. Like, this is like my little way of creating a little bit of quiet in my own life by just saying, I don't want to have a cell phone. It creates like some, you know, distance from that technology. Like, when I walk away from Wi-Fi, when I walk away from my computer, like, for that little bit of time, like, I'm offline.
Yeah, you know, it's great. And I'm envious because every once in a while I'm able to do this when I go on vacation to Mexico or someplace. It's tough, though, but I try, put the phone away, try to stay disconnected. But your story and your disconnection without a cell phone makes you perfect for this story of The Quiet Zone, right?
I mean, yeah, I haven't had a cell phone since 2009, and increasingly, like, I feel like a hermit in modern society, right? 97% of Americans have cell phones. Most of those are smartphones. Increasingly, it's just assumption that we're always, all of us always, are always going to be connected all the time for the sake of a spouse or an employer who wants to be, you know, have 24/7 access to our lives. I just find that invasive and unnecessary. And eventually in 2017, I was like kind of thinking, where do I fit in this world? Is there a place where other people are like me and might kind of share my philosophical aversion to being always connected? And I did a simple online search for places without cell service, and up popped Green Bank, West Virginia, supposedly the quietest town in America. Yeah, and I was there within weeks.
And it's an interesting place because it's called the National Radio Quiet Zone, right? And this is a big area in eastern West Virginia. But this antenna that's there in that area is just really cool. It's like, looks like a spaceship, the Green Bank Telescope, right?
That's right.
And so what is it there for? The whole purpose of this area is for what? And why is there no digital communication in that area of West Virginia?
So there is a lot of digital communication. It just can't be, it's not supposed to be wireless communication. That means like you're not supposed to have cell service and any other kinds of devices that might emit electromagnetic radiation. They can really pose a harm to the science they're trying to do there with this massive Green Bank telescope. So back in the 50s, for context, the National Science Foundation wanted to establish our very first national radio astronomy observatory. Radio astronomy measures radio waves coming in from the far reaches of the universe, and those radio waves can like clue us into what's happening out there and to like, you know, let us unravel the mysteries of the universe. But you can't do that radio astronomy if you're in a radio noisy place like a city or a suburb.
Makes sense.
So Green Bank was Green Bank was deemed to be like the quietest natural place. And then there was a state law and a federal law that were passed in the late 50s to keep it quiet. And the federal law was this National Radio Quiet Zone. It's 13,000 square miles in size, at the size of Connecticut and Massachusetts combined, that surrounds Green Bank. And if anybody, any business, any person wants to install a fixed licensed communications installation, you know, cell antenna, radio antenna, et cetera, you have to get permission first from the Quiet Zone Administrator, who is based out of the Green Bank Observatory. And she'll give you a yay or a nay vote based on whether she determines that your cell antenna is going to interfere with those telescopes that are trying to listen to the faint whispers of the universe.
But, Stephen, you can't have, like, there's no microwave ovens, vacuum cleaners, air conditioners, any of those things are not allowed in that area, right?
So that's what I went in there to find out. Like, so many media headlines paint this place as being, tech-free utopia, right, where smartphones are banned is the headline, or Wi-Fi is illegal. But pretty quickly I found that people living there kind of resent a lot of this media because it's so inaccurate. It's so untrue about the reality there. There's plenty of vacuum cleaners. Everybody has a microwave. And over my several years there, it's become the case that there are more Wi-Fi signals in the Green Bank area than there are homes. Wi-Fi has become so pervasive around town. And that's really a problem for the Green Bank Observatory, to the point that, like, the observatory can no longer do its observations in that Wi-Fi band of 2.4 gigahertz, 5 gigahertz. Like, it's become so polluted that they're not being able to do their radio astronomy in those bands. And that's, like, one hard takeaway from that is, you know, the Green Bank telescope, it's doing ongoing search for ET. Like, the Green Bank Observatory, it was the site of the world's very first search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Like, if ET is out there trying to message Earth, Green Bank will probably be the first town to know. But it's not going to find out or hear anything if ET is signaling us in the 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi band, because it's so noisy, we're not going to get that message anymore.
Stephen Kersey is my guest. His book is called The Quiet Zone, Unraveling the Mystery of a Town Suspended in Silence. But this book is really not about technology or anything like that. It's about a cast of characters, right? The electrosensitives.
That's one of many characters that are there. Yeah, I found that, you know, quiet has a real magnetic, attractive quality to it that manifests itself here in the quietest place in America. And that quiet has pulled in a number of people and groups over the past half century's, you know, existence of the Quiet Zone. First came the radio astronomers, then came actually the U.S. military, who not far away from Green Bank established its own secretive military station called Sugar Grove, where to this day the National Security Agency operates its own collection of radio antennas that are essentially, you know, eavesdropping on the radio noise elsewhere on the East Coast of America. It's been called our nation's very largest eavesdropping bug. And its work is only possible because of the Quiet Zone. The quiet enables it to do that monitoring, that listening. So you have the astronomers and the government spies. Then you have, like, a wave of backslanders and hippies. And then you had a notorious group of neo-Nazis come into the area. And then more recently, the latest group to be attracted to that radio quiet are people known as electrosensitives. So they have a kind of, you know, controversial debated disease known as electromagnetic hypersensitivity.
Right.
If anybody out there has seen the show Better Call Saul,
yes,
you know, the character of Chuck McGill, he has this. He wraps himself, right, in a tinfoil blanket, and he has all the breakers off in his house because he thinks that he's physically harmed by that stuff. There are thousands of people who are like Chuck McGill around the world who believe they have this. Hundreds of them have moved to the Quiet Zone. They've moved to the Green Bank area because they think it's their last refuge, yeah, in a noisy world.
But again, they think that's that way, for not to spoil anything from Better Call Saul, but obviously there would be some questions, I guess, medically about whether or not that is truly their disorder, right?
Absolutely. This is not recognized by the World Health Organization, by the American Medical Association. You know, it's like with anything, right? You can find some scientists and some studies to support, you know, these beliefs. These people are absolutely convinced, however, that they have it. And, I mean, just to underscore that, I met people from France, from Asia, from Turkey. There was a woman who left her husband back in the New York City area. Her family lives back there. She moved all alone 500 miles to this, you know, remote boonies of West Virginia, where she's living all alone, because she is so convinced that this is the only place where she can get away from that pain. Like, they feel better there. Like, my own conclusion from speaking with them is, like, shouldn't there be one place right, in the world that stays radio quiet, if not for the sake of these electrosensitives who feel they're better there, but at least for the sake of science, this absolutely legitimate, amazing science, which is trying to unlock the mysteries of the universe.
But it sounds like what you're also saying is that it's this quiet zone. There's law that accompanies this where you have to keep the area radio quiet. But there are things that are happening on a regular basis that aren't so quiet, right?
Yeah, on multiple levels. You know, like I said, like it's not quite as quiet electromagnetically speaking as the media makes it out to be, which also, you know, ties back to the electrosensitives. They feel they're better there, right, even though there is still quite a bit of Wi-Fi and other electronics there. So, like, something is happening that they feel better despite still being surrounded by a lot of that stuff. That said, there's still no cell service that's in Green Bank. That's one way that they've been able to keep it quiet. In another way, it's also kind of noisy because that quiet has attracted so many people and so many interesting groups to this area. Like, you know, I mentioned briefly the neo-Nazis who are there. This wasn't just any group of neo-Nazis. This was considered America's preeminent, most influential neo-Nazi organization. It was called the National Alliance. It was led by a man named William Luther Pierce, the author of a notorious book of racist futurism called The Turner Diaries, kind of made famous by the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995. Timothy McVeigh was found with that novel, The Turner Diaries, and it was considered a motivating text for McVeigh and for dozens of other acts of deadly far-right violence around the world. The author of that book, William Pierce, and his organization, the National Alliance, he was based there from the mid-80s until his death in 2002, and the organization is still there. The quiet really attracted William Pierce. He could get away from law enforcement, from civil rights groups, from minorities, from all the things that were badgering him back in the Washington, D.C. area where he used to live. The quiet zone pulled him in, and really that quiet was a cover. Right? It allowed him to do his evil work there without much oversight and without much nuisance or bothering from the locals.
So what's the – I don't know if there's just one takeaway here, because there's so much in here and it's complicated and you got a lot of weird things that are happening certainly in this town, and you highlight that in the book. But – you know, we've talked about this a couple of times during the interview. I love the idea of going away on a vacation, unplugging, not being able to be dependent on digital technology, and you have that freedom. But it's very rare to have that. Most people aren't able to do that just with the, you know, the grind of everyday life. So is it something that's desirable beyond the quiet zone, I guess, is one of the questions here.
Absolutely. I mean, from my research, yes, I think lots of people are looking for quiet, and lots of people are recognizing that, you know, having this, like, we all have this feeling of tech overload, right? We all have this
Absolutely.
Feeling of, like,
right.
we have there's a million tabs open on your computer, and you're never going to get through all of them. Like, and we're always being, you know, bombarded by our boss, or, you know, getting that message, or we're just feeling that urge to check our device and then looking at it and feeling let down by it. And then, like, we're letting down our family at the same time because we're no longer in the moment with them. There's numerous people in Silicon Valley, the people who created this technology, who are now sounding the alarm and saying it's addictive. It's not good for our, you know, for our mental health necessarily. And they're not letting their own children have this stuff. Like, they're not letting their own kids have smartphones, and they're putting all kinds of parental controls if they do have it. So yeah, there's a worldwide kind of like craving for quiet, I believe, right now. And that comes in multiple layers. It's both radio quiet, and it's also manifests itself in audio quiet. And you know, in my research, I found that there's one man. He's actually done a nationwide search looking for audibly quiet places. There's only like a dozen spots that remain where you're not going to hear any man-made sounds for about 15 minutes. Only a dozen places where you're going to find audible quiet. And that's a symptom also of the radio noise that's happening all around us. We're all just looking for a piece of quiet, and the quiet zone. This is like, it's our nation's only national radio quiet zone. It's the only one we're ever going to be able to create, because so many people want to have access to Wi-Fi and to other kinds of like wireless communications, cell technology, whatever. Like, we're never going to have another quiet zone. This one's under threat. Like, this book is a lot about like, can the quiet endure here? And really, if it can't endure here, what does that mean for the rest of us trying to create some kind of quiet spaces in our own lives?
Yep. Fascinating questions. The Quiet Zone, unraveling the mystery of a town suspended in silence. Stephen Kersey, I appreciate coming on here. I think it's very, very interesting and timely in the sense that here again this week we have this revelation on how much Facebook knew about what Instagram was doing to young kids and young girls in particular. So these are issues that are rather important moving forward. And it's an interesting book. So thank you so much for coming on here in St. Louis on 97.1 FM Talk.
Great talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Stephen Kersey, my guest on 97.1 FM Talk. He was a very quiet talker, wasn't he?
I really kind of liked that about him. It fit with the whole story. That was really interesting.
Do you think you could even, like, let's say that you had to, I think you could probably do this easier than me or Dave, but if I said, okay, you're going to unplug right now on Friday afternoon, you get off at 6, you're unplugged until Monday. Could you do that, you think? No cell phone.
If there was a
no TV.
Oh, no TV.
Well, you're an outdoorsy type of person.
I could do a lot of outside. But if you said that to me in the dead of winter when it was freezing cold and there was nothing to do outside, that would be really a challenge.
Right, right. Dave?
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I've made the effort going out to dinner situations like that because you don't want to always be checking your phone, but it is tough. But I've been successful down in Mexico when I go in the spring, mainly because
you
don't get great service and even the Wi-Fi where we stay. So that forces you. But unless you're forced, sometimes it's a little hard to put yourself in that situation. 627, we'll go up to Whistling Straits, get a Ryder Cup wrap-up from this day. The Americans looking pretty good for once in the Ryder Cup. It's been an interesting day. Dan is up there. He reports.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Next, we have an audio cut of the day before the end of the hour. Cardinals have won 13 games in a row, and here's another crazy thing. The United States is up 5-1 on the Europeans in the Ryder Cup. Dan Reardon, Whistling Straits, Sheboygan, Wisconsin, or Kohler, both of those, I guess. How are you, Dan? How are things up there? I can hear the wind off of Lake Michigan.
Yeah, the morning the wind was reasonably calm. In the afternoon, it's come up to 20 miles an hour with some gusts running as high as 30. But you're right. If you are a U.S. fan, you're already 5-1 on the board. You've got two matches going on. The Americans are up by one in one of those matches and down by one. They could sweep the afternoon. That's not impossible. And that would be probably the most lopsided start in Ryder Cup history.
All right, let me start with a little shout-out to a European because, and I mentioned him, I think, 2 days ago, Sergio. He just kills it at the Ryder Cup. So he has equaled the all-time record for matches won with 23 at the Ryder Cup.
Some of that, obviously much of that goes to his credit as a player. Some of that goes to his longevity as a player. You know, Sergio, being one of the youngest ever to play in a Ryder Cup and now in his 40s, has played an enormous number of these events. So the point total is as much a reflection of how many events he's been in as they are of how well he's done in them. And right now, he and John Rahm have the only point for the Europeans. They won their match this morning. Other than that, the problem that Patrick Harrington has is that almost half the team, if not more, will go into tomorrow's matches having been beaten by the U.S.
So let's talk about Rahm and Garcia with Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. And a lot of people, if you haven't seen this yet, you're probably going to on SportsCenter tonight or they'll show the highlight. But on 17 at Whistling Straits, and for those people who have never been there, Lake Michigan is right there on the shore of the golf course, and there are some steep, steep banks. It was made this way on purpose because it resembles more of a links course from across the pond. So Jordan Spieth, Dan, at 17, was it his drive or was it – well, it would have been Justin Thomas's drive that went over the edge, right?
That's correct. And the best way I could describe where he was on a grass cliff.
Yes.
To the right of the green.
Sue has seen it. I showed her the video.
Almost standing sideways on a cliff, and he hit an amazing shot. Soared it into the air, and it came down and dropped 4 feet from the hole. But that was incidental because he lost his balance. Halfway down the slope, he turned to regain his control and literally came to a stop probably 4 feet from falling into Lake Michigan.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, we got to talk about that shot because you're right. Everyone who sees the video is going to focus on him almost falling into the lake down this cliff. But that shot coming out of that level of rough with the angle that he had, that has to be one of the best golf shots of the year.
certainly something you can never practice.
No, not at all. All right, so how did all this happen? Your observations from day one with the morning and the afternoon sessions, which some of which are going on right now, because it's a good start, but it's not over yet, is it?
No, it is not, although it really looks favorable for the Americans and sets the tone for the rest of the weekend. I have a good friend who works for Irish Radio, Greg Allen, and we've talked a couple of times a day. And I said to Greg, the thing that I'm seeing right now out of the Europeans is they've had opportunities throughout the day. They don't have the pace of these greens. They're struggling with the speed of these greens. And it's well known that when matches are played in Europe, they slow the greens down. And when they play matches in the U.S., they speed the greens up because the American Tour has fast greens. But the fact of the matter is that most of these Europeans play the American Tour. So that's not as easy an explanation as it may sound. But basically, what we've seen is the Americans have outperformed, outputted. You know, if you look at the U.S. team, the only player you can cite that is a little bit of a problem is Justin Thomas. He may end up losing 2 points today. Everybody else that Steve Stricker wants to go to has been sensational. Tony Finau playing in his second Ryder Cup, 6 birdies in today's match. Unbelievable in that sense.
By the way, going back to the Cliff incident, what happened was, so Thomas hears this, you know, great shot, and then on the alternating, Jordan Spieth misses misses the putt, right?
That's correct. It's ironic that one of the greatest shots we've seen in Ryder Cup history ends up being on losing the hole and having the match closed out.
Yeah, unfortunately. So Bryson, I didn't see this, but I was listening to the coverage. He hits a 417-yard drive on a par 5. They're only 72 yards out, right?
He does do that, but every time he's used his power, he hasn't been able to finish it. He's played off the tee a little erratic, but even he's been greenside. He was greenside on a par 5 with 2, and yet he struggled to make a putt to save par. I would say DeChambeau, I'm curious to see what Stricker does with him tomorrow. I thought he would go out in the alternate shot where somebody could ride his length to an advantage. Instead, he went out in the afternoon, and I think maybe Steve Stricker doesn't have as much confidence in Bryson DeChambeau. You know, if you're playing an alternate shot, every stroke counts. If you're playing in the four ball or better ball, you can have a bad round. And if your partner like Tony Finau is really good, you can hide a bad player. Bryson hasn't been a bad player, but he has not demonstrated that his length is effective at this golf course.
So, Dan, explain how the format then works throughout the rest of the weekend. What are we looking at tomorrow?
We repeat the same format that we had today. The morning is what's called foursomes or alternate shot. The afternoon is four ball, which is the best ball format. It'll repeat the same. Incumbent, regardless of how these last two matches turn out, incumbent for the Europeans to get an early start. You know, again, talking to Greg Allen, he thought that psychological momentum is going to work against this team. If they get down early, they're going to be very difficult to perk themselves up. And he also has a problem in the case of Patrick Harrington that he sat his three most experienced players, Westwood and Poulter, and I forget who the third one is, but his older players did not go out in the afternoon. So he's protecting them from walking this very difficult golf course. The other question would be, can John Rahm go out and play 5 matches? Can he play tomorrow morning and afternoon and then go out and play singles on Sunday without losing anything? He's the only weapon they have right now, and he's going to have to do that.
All right, well, you enjoy, and I got to ask about the crowds up there. What are the crowds like? Obviously, many more American fans than Europeans, although I spent many years with, strong European influence there in some parts of Milwaukee. But what's the fan turnout like there at Whistling Straits, Dan?
The turnout is great. In fact, the traffic is even greater. It took 2 hours for me to get 4 miles from the golf course into the golf course. But it's an American crowd. There are very few Europeans. So if you want to talk about a typical Ryder Cup event, it's usually more fun when you have a large representation from the other side of the ocean, whether it be America or Europe. It's always better in this situation. There are no roars for the Europeans. Of course, they've not done much to generate roars. So I would say this is a very different Ryder Cup because the Europeans, because of pandemic restrictions, were not able to get here.
Well, so, because this becomes, for people who don't follow us on a regular basis, this thing kind of gets raucous sometimes, right, with the fans.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I won't give you the language, but I will tell you, I walked all 18 with Rory McIlroy and Patrick Reed last year when a fan made an unpleasant comment to Rory on the 16th hole, and he started to go into the crowd to get after him, and it was a rude and vulgar comment made to him. Yeah, it gets out of hand. It's been so very good this year. The first day has been very good, but there are no Europeans. So, I mean, you know, the Americans haven't abused the Europeans, but there are no Europeans to abuse anybody.
Well, one of the things I said this to Sue, maybe it's just my imagination, but I watch a fair amount of golf. It seemed to me just in observing the, you know, the morning session, because I didn't get to see much of the afternoon, that when another team, if the Americans hit a good shot, I saw John Rahm, Sergio maybe acknowledge that more than I would if they were just competing one-on-one. Is that my imagination or not?
No, I think the sportsmanship has been pretty good. I think there has been very little games going on. You know, I go back to a long time ago when Paul Azinger and Seve Ballesteros got into it quite a bit on the golf course. And when they said got into it, they just made a point to get under the other one's skin a little bit.
Yeah.
And by the way, a little piece of history. If this first day turns out the way it's going to look, you'd have to go back to 2004 when the Europeans blistered the U.S. at Oakland Hills. That was the year that Hal Sutton thought it was a good idea to put Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, a group, together for a few days, and that didn't work out very well. That's the last time we've seen the first day be as lopsided as this one might be.
By the way, Phil, I didn't realize this until I saw this too. Like, Phil's one of the assistant coaches, right?
Yeah, and they commented on television that he has been sort of tied at the hip to DeChambeau throughout most of the round. Interesting point, though, that they've made, that only the captains can give advice in terms of how to play a hole. They can talk to the players about a number of things, but they can't say you should hit a 7-iron or the wind's coming that direction.
Now, only the caddies and the captains, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing I saw, just as an observation, because I watched, I saw somebody tee off. I don't even know who it was. I think it was a European, with no hat. You never see that.
That's Victor Hovland.
He looked different without a hat. That's why I didn't recognize him.
Oh, that's funny.
But,
well, let me point out, though, that Patrick Cantlay played much of the morning round with no hat. Of course, I don't know how that match started.
I think that's who I saw. I think I saw Cantlay. But is there some rule with hats? I know they use them for their sponsors. Is that why they don't necessarily have the sponsors this weekend?
No, I don't think that's the case. You know, we go back to Rory McIlroy. I think at the Olympics didn't wear a hat, and it turned out the manufacturer for the Europeans couldn't get him a fitted cap. So rather than wear one that didn't fit,
okay,
he didn't go out with it. And by the way, Cantlay put on the hat later in the day, but he was sort of confident because their match started the first five holes. They won all five holes. They were five up after five holes starting. And one other note about the players, Rory McIlroy, who after John Rahm should be the mainstay on this team, he's going to be shut out today. He's going to lose both of his matches.
Oh, well,
oof.
That's interesting.
But not a lot of
here's
good
what
news
I would say.
If you're a European
America.
Fan.
That's what I say. America. Let's go Americans, right? Dan Reardon, you have a great weekend. I was a little surprised, too, that it was cooler here than it was at Whistling Straits this morning, believe it or not.
It's cooled off this afternoon, though, and we got a little rain or sprinkle come in that late in the day.
Hey, I know Wisconsin weather. It could snow by Sunday night, let me tell you right now. Dan, have a great weekend, all right? Have fun.
Enjoyed it, Mark.
Damn it, Klein. Now, I feel I have a selection for my musical pick of the week, but I feel like it has to be the Stones. We've been playing all Stones bumpers, and this is one of my favorite Stones songs, so I don't know. I'll have to think about it here. I like this part, too.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it is.
All right, let me think. I may be obligated to play the Stones, especially since Mick was down underneath the arch. I could say something, but Sue would be upset if I say it. Like,
what?
Well, I hope that Mick doesn't get shot and makes it to the show since he's hanging out in downtown St. Louis. I'm just looking out for his safety. I'm looking out for his safety. That's all it is.
Stand by. Playback ready. Initiating sequence. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Oh, this is a good one. This is a real good one. So Ducey in the press room with Mayorkas today. Now, this whole nonsense, and people are all over this country, people are being led to believe that you had Border Patrol agents whipping Haitians in Del Rio. It simply did not happen. Even the photographer who took the images said, look, it's not what the picture may lead you to believe. And we've now known that these were rains, they were long rains. That's not stopping Biden from saying, we're going to go after these guys because they want another distraction. But Ducey does a great job with the HHS secretary today, or the whatever his deal is. What's Mayorkas's title?
I don't know.
Well, he's just a bureaucrat. We'll just say that.
Just to go back, please, to the images of these mounted Border Patrol officers. You said on Saturday, or rather on the 20th,
Homeland Security.
For control of the horse, long reins are used. The person who took these photos of the Border Patrol agents says, I've never seen them whip anyone. So why is the president out there today talking about people being strapped?
Let me correct the statements in your question, if I may. It was on Friday. If I may, it was on Friday when I was actually it was on Monday.
He doesn't even know when it was.
Oh boy.
Well, wait. Let me correct this. Let me correct something that I don't even know what I'm correcting here. I mean, he's Homeland Security. That's what he is. Secretary of Homeland Security. Secretary.
That was 4 or 5 days ago, man.
Yeah. Hey, that's
Come
right.
Come on, man.
Hey, that is a theme in this administration, isn't
I
it?
I believe when I was in Del Rio. On the ground, and I made the statements without having seen the images. I saw the images on the flight back, and I made the statement that I did with respect to what those images suggested. The horses have long reins, and the image in the photograph that we all saw that horrified the nation.
Hang on. Did it horrify the nation? Did it really horrify? I don't think it horrified the nation. It horrified the people that made it into something that it wasn't. It horrified, Maxine Waters, who I can't believe, and I really can't even believe the Democrats and the left are letting people get away with comparing this to slavery, because it's now been compared to slavery.
Gosh.
You know, people are horrified. This is where this administration is so off base. They're horrified by seeing thousands, if not tens of thousands of immigrants flood over an open border. An open border and not be stopped. That's what they're upset about. And they were actually, I think most people in this country would be supportive of these border agents up against what they were up against.
Serious questions about about what occurred. And as I stated quite clearly, it conjured up images of what has occurred in the past. Let me finish.
That's the slavery reference right there. It conjures up images, even though it has nothing to do with slavery, and it wasn't even a whip.
There's also a question of how one uses the horse and how one interacts with individuals with the horse.
Racist horse. This is what I hear right now. This horse is about as racist as they come.
And so I'm going to let the investigation run its course. I'm not going to interfere with that investigation. The facts will be determined by the investigators, and then the results will be driven by the facts that are determined.
And to follow up, please, before the facts are in, is it helpful to your investigation for the President of the United States to use inflammatory language like people being strapped?
Well, let me just be very clear and repeat what I've said. I am not concerned with respect to the integrity of the investigation. We know how to conduct an investigation with integrity. I served as 12 years as a federal prosecutor. There were a great deal of comments in many of the cases that I handled in the public sphere, and I know how to maintain the integrity of an investigation, and this investigation will have integrity.
So what's going to happen when the investigation comes back and it shows that they were not whipping these guys? Because we did an investigation of what happened in Ferguson. The facts showed it wasn't hands up, don't shoot. All these things that people still believe, but the facts didn't matter. I'm going out with the Stones. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the show if you're going Sunday.
Get more at 971talk.com. Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.